with you this morning. We're going to be looking at parables, and this week we're going to be looking at the parable of the sower from Luke chapter 8. This is a really interesting parable to me. I've always enjoyed this parable, and we're going to take a kind of a little bit of a different approach to it this morning. So this large crowd had gathered, and Jesus shared this parable, and so we're going to read through the parable, and we're going to go back through and look at it this morning. It says, the sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell beside the road, and it was trampled underfoot, and the birds of the air ate it up. And other seed fell on rocky soil, and as soon as it grew up, it withered away because it had no moisture. Now other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up with it and choked it out. And then other seed fell into the good soil and grew up and produced a crop 100 times as great. And as he said these things, he would call out, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Okay. Now this parable, most of you have probably heard this parable before. This is probably not new to most of you. But most of the time when we go through this parable, what we do is we take time and we break down the different soils, because when the disciples asked Jesus what the parable meant, he went through and explained that the seed was the gospel, the good news of God, and that then he went through and kind of talked about the different soil. This morning, I don't want to talk about the soil. I want to talk about the sower, because the sower is kind of the central character in this. And there are three things I want to talk about the sower this morning. So I don't really want to focus so much on the soil. That's usually what we do. And I want to kind of take a different approach to this morning. So there are three things about the sower that I want to mention this morning and talk about. And I'm not sure how long this will take. We'll see. But we're going to start with the idea of the seed. That says the sower went out to sow his seed, and he sowed some. And then if you'll notice, he sows it all over the place. And so the first thing about this particular text I would have mentioned is that the sower does not seem to have a short amount of seed. He's just kind of throwing it wherever. Now, Jesus says the seed is the gospel of the good news. Now, how many of you have ever had to ration anything? How many of you have ever run out of stuff? One of my favorite things back before Apple Pay and the idea that you could pay for stuff with a cell phone. In fact, I worked at a record store in the 90s in Washington, and we didn't even have one of those credit card machines where you just swipe the card. We had one of those things where you had to take the credit card and put it in the little thing and slide the thing across it with the that made the print of it. And almost nobody paid with a credit card back then. People would come in, they'd write checks, or they'd pay with cash in the record store. Most teenagers obviously didn't have credit cards back then anyway. And so we didn't do a lot of those. And so what we did, most of our transactions were cash. And one of the worst things in the world was when you would get to the weekend and realize that somebody forgot to go to the bank and get change. So you come in Saturday morning, I would come in on Saturday morning, and a lot of times I would work like 10 to 7 or 10 to 5 on Saturday. So I would come in, and the first thing you'd do is you'd check the register to see if there was change. And then if somebody on Friday had forgotten to go to the bank and get change, you would start running around the mall begging for change. And the looks of stupidity that you would get from people, like, "How did you get to Saturday with no change?" And they would look, and I was like, "It wasn't me. I didn't work yesterday." Yeah, no, not we're not, and nobody wanted to give up their change. And so we'd have to ration change. Now, if you're wondering, how do you ration change? Carefully. You do it carefully. Now, some of you probably, and I won't look in any particular direction as I say this, some of you may remember the Great Depression. and rationing in the Great Depression. Some of you, we may have some folks in here that remember that. Some of you may remember the energy crisis in the 70s when people were rationing gasoline. I kind of feel like we're back there almost. You know, that time when you say, well, maybe I don't want to drive today because gas, there's not a lot of gas and there's shortages, and you go to the gas station, there were lines. I remember the lines. I don't remember driving in them, but I remember riding. I remember sitting in the lines at the gas station with Dad. I wasn't old enough to drive back then, but I do remember those lines. And so we understand the concept of rationing. Okay, so here's the question. Is there any reason any of us should need to ration the gospel? No, it's like it's an endless supply, right? I mean, there's no fear that we're, well, some of you may fear you're going to run out of the gospel. I don't know. That would be unfortunate. But the idea is that the sower is under no constraint to be careful with the seed he's sowing. Now, if you read this parable and you're a pragmatist, and some of you may be, you might read this parable and go, the sower went out to sow a seed, and he sowed some, and it fell beside the road. Why was the sower throwing seed beside the road? Because he had plenty. He didn't have to be careful, just slinging it around, right? I'm just going to throw it out there and see what grows, or just throw it out there. I'm just going to sow it wherever. And so he wasn't particularly careful with where he sowed it. The sower had plenty of seed, so I'm just going to put it out there and see what grows. Sometimes we treat the gospel as if we have a very finite amount of it, and so we're exceptionally cautious with where we sow it, because it's almost like we don't want to run out. And this is, you know, you see this concept in other parables. Do you guys remember the parable of the talents? And the guy who had one, do you remember what he did with his? So he went, he buried it. And when the master came back and asked him why he did that, what did he tell him? He said, you're a harsh master. And I was so afraid of losing what you gave me, I thought it was safer to just hide it and bury it. So this was not an uncommon theme in Jesus' parables. It's like, look, you've been given something by God, not for the purpose of hoarding it, but expressly for the purpose of what? Sharing it. Right. I mean, that's kind of the whole concept of the good news. And so as I kind of stand here this morning looking out at the sowers, you are the sowers in the parable. That's your role. You're the sowers. And so as you sit down this morning, you hear this, okay, so I'm the sower. What does that mean? Well, the question is, how stingy are you with the seed? Are you out there sowing seed wherever you go? Or are you like, well, I'm not going to sow any seed here, because that would probably be a waste of the seed, and I only have a certain amount. And the truth is, you have an infinite amount. The gospel is infinite. You have plenty of it. There's never a time where you would look at seed that was sown and go, well, that was wasted. And so the sower, the parable of the sower is about infinite amount of seed to sow. Just get out there and sow the seed. Okay, just get there and sow the seed. Now, the next thing that kind of comes up in this is the idea of the soil. Now, how many of you, if you were the sower, would be more discriminating with where you put your seed? You walk around and you go, okay, this is land by the roadside. Probably not a good idea to sow here because it's going to be wasted. And there's some thorns and some stuff over here. And so if I sow seed here, it's probably not going to grow very well. And over here, it's a little rocky, and the seed, you know, it's just going to get burned in the sun anyway, so there's no reason. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to look for the perfect patch. I want you to take note that the sower doesn't judge the soil in this parable, which is really interesting. The sower doesn't judge the soil. What does the sower do when he gets the seed? He sows it. And what does he let the soil do? He lets the soil judge itself. He lets the soil judge itself. How many of you have ever seen a person that you did not think was worthy of the gospel? Now think carefully about that before you answer. Don't answer it out loud. This is kind of a personal question. The truth is, we probably have in our minds people who are not worthy of the gospel, people that we think are irredeemable, people that we don't think deserve redemption. That person doesn't deserve salvation. They've done too many bad things. How many of you would probably in your heart question why anybody would do a prison ministry? You know, I've got a friend now who is involved in prison ministry in Texas, and he used to be a minister here in Greenville, and now he does prison ministry, which is funny because if you knew Carl was never, I mean, I would have never have pictured Carl as a guy doing prison ministry. And by the way, Carl would tell you the same thing. That's not something he would ever do. But he does prison ministry now. And he said, what's really funny is, he said, you'd be amazed the number of people who have a hard time rejoicing when someone with a life sentence in prison accepts Christ as his Savior and is forgiven of his sins. Because if you're on death row, then what is your sin? Or if you've got a life in prison sentence, what is the sin that you've probably committed? You've probably committed murder, if not multiple murders. Perhaps you were a pedophile. Maybe you're a rapist. Maybe you're an armed robber. I mean, there could be any number of crimes that would be associated with that. And we would sit there and ask ourselves this question. Are those people worthy of the gospel? Now, that should be fairly obvious, right? That question should be fairly obvious, right? Because who is worthy of the gospel? Well, that's the irony of it, right? No one's worthy of it, and yet everyone's worthy of it. That's what's fantastic about it. None of us in this room are worthy of it, yet we've all received it. And that's because Christ has made us worthy of it. And so you sit there and go, okay, so what is the soil? What is the soil that's worthy? And somebody might say, well, why would you even go to prison and waste your time? These people they're incarcerated for life. Why? I mean, that's the rockiest soil there is. And some might even argue, wouldn't that guy's time be better served witnessing to people outside of prison who might be able to be better ambassadors for Christ? And the answer is no. But this is the way we think in the modern world. We look at groups of people and demographics of people, and we decide who's worthy and who isn't worthy. And you know what? I could sow some seed over there, but what's the likelihood it's going to grow? But that's not what the sower does. What's the sower do? I'm going to throw a little over here. And then you can imagine if somebody was with the sower going, dude, what are you doing? Why are you throwing seed over there? Hey, it might grow. It might grow. I'm going to throw some over here. When I was a kid, my mother always had a garden. We had a garden. And I hated the garden. I hated the garden. And the reason I hated the garden is it was labor intensive and nothing grew in it that was any good. Let me tell you the kind of nonsense that grew in that garden. Collards grew in that garden. Cabbage grew in that garden. Beans of multiple descriptions. Radishes, which I'm not even sure what their purpose is. You don't actually eat those. I mean, they're like decorative in a salad, but I don't know what their purpose is. I mean, it was all this stuff that grew in the garden. Squash. I mean, squash. How hungry must someone in history have been to look at a squash and go, I could eat that? And so I approached my mother because there's really only one thing that grows in the garden that interested me. Carrots. Now, I don't know how many of you have spent a lot of time in Washington County, but let me tell you what does not grow well in the black dirt of Washington County. Carrots. The only decent thing in a garden wouldn't grow in our garden. But you know what my mom planted every year for me? Carrots. She planted them every year. We'd plant them every year. As she knew. She knew when she planted them what was going to happen. The little sad things. And it was really funny because the little green things would grow out of the ground, you know. And then it was time to pull them, and the carrot would be like that long. Little raggedy-looking thing. It was really sad. By the way, if any of you want to know, when you buy a bag of carrots and this little thing's about this long, those were probably grown in Washington County. But my mother planted carrots for me every year when we had a garden. She planted them. She knew they weren't going to grow, but she planted them because, hey, maybe, who knows, maybe they'll grow. The sower goes out and he sows the seed, and he doesn't really take any time to judge the soil. He says, you know what, I'm going to plant the seed. Maybe it'll grow. We'll see what happens. I'm going to throw it out there. But he says, you know what, that's what the seed is for. The seed is to plant it. You know, if the soil isn't going to grow the seed, that's the soil's problem. It's not my problem. I'm going to go out there and plant it. By the way, how many of you have ever tried something you were sure wasn't going to work and then it worked? I'm sure that's happened. There was a team this weekend that went out on the basketball court from New Jersey, St. Peter's. And I'm sure that of all the people that were in that stadium watching them play Kentucky, and if you're from Kentucky this morning, I'm not going to apologize to you. You get what you deserve for hiring your coach. There you go. I said it. John Calipari, you get what you deserve. Nobody thought they were going to win except them. And I don't even know how many of them thought they were going to win. But they went out there and they played. They played the game. And guess what? They won. And they were so excited to win, they went out the next game and won again. One of my favorite things from the tournament this weekend, they were interviewing a guy, and he wasn't from St. Peter's. He was from one of the other teams that upset somebody. And they asked him, he said, so when did it occur to you that you could actually win this game? And he went, last Thursday. As soon as we found out who we were playing, we always thought we could win the game. It was like, what a stupid question, you know. But he said, we always thought we could win the game. Now he goes, y'all didn't think we could win, but we always believed we could. You know, we look out at the soil sometimes and we think, well, you know, there's probably not a really good chance this is going to grow. But the parable of the sower is all about not judging the soil, but just casting the seed. I'm going to put the seed out there. I'm going to put the seed out there. I'm going to put the water out there. I'm going to give this thing a chance to grow. If it grows, that's great. If it doesn't, well, that's unfortunate. But at least I gave it an opportunity. How many people do you think on Judgment Day are going to look at God and be like, well, nobody ever told me. And then he's going to look at all his sowers and be like, why didn't anybody tell these people? And what are the sowers going to say? Well, they weren't going to listen anyway. Can you imagine the look you're going to get from God on Judgment Day when you look at him and say, they weren't going to listen anyway? And what do you suppose he's going to say to you then? How did you know that? How hard would it have been for you to throw a little seed over there anyway? Whose seed was it anyway? It's my seed, right? I gave it to you. It's not like it belongs to you. It was mine. What did I tell you to do? Great Commission. Do what? Go into all the world, right? Go into all the world. Sow the seed, man. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to give you a full supply of it. Get out there and fling it around. See what grows. And so the parable of the sower is about the sower going out and throwing the seed and not judging the soil, but letting the soil judge itself. I'm just going to go out there and sow it, and maybe something amazing and unexpected will happen. All right. So number one, an inexhaustible supply of seed. Number two, indiscriminate about where you sow it. Don't judge the soil, just sow the seed. Number three, the sower isn't judged on the harvest. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about this parable is that as you go through the parable, Jesus describes what happens to the seed. Let's listen to this. He says, he went out and he sowed the seed. He said, and some fell beside the road, and it was trampled underfoot, and the birds of the air ate it up, and it was the sower's fault. Nope, doesn't say that. And then other seed fell on the rocky soil, and as soon as it grew up, it withered away because it had no moisture. Nothing about the sower's fault. Other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up with it and choked it out. Nothing about the sower's fault. Other seed fell in the good soil and grew up and produced a crop 100 times as great. Now, one of the things that is interesting for us as sowers is I think sometimes we worry way too much about success. We worry about success rates. We worry about that a lot, as if somehow in heaven percentage is going to be what determines if you're saved. I had a 100% win rate, Jesus, when I witnessed. I witnessed to two people in my life, and they both became Christians. I got 100%. Woohoo! Let me in. Now, what do you suppose Jesus is going to say to you on Judgment Day if you witnessed to two people in your entire life? Let's see. How long were you a Christian? 60 years. So you averaged one witness every 30 years. How pleased, by the way, my wife is very happy I didn't get that math equation wrong. She's that's right. Simple math for me. There you go. How excited do you think God would be if you got to Judgment Day and you had a rate of one witness for every 30 years? You think he'd be pleased with that? Probably not. Probably not. One of the things that's really interesting is that sometimes we get really worried about failure. And we get worried about failure to the point that we become obsessive about it. And we're so worried that we might fail that we don't ever try. We've just adopted this idea that, well, these people probably aren't going to listen to me anyway. And, you know, nobody I ever invite to church or nobody ever witness to seems interested. And so I'm just going to quit. I'm going to give up. How many of you, I know a lot of you are basketball fans. A lot of you people in here really like Michael Jordan, right? A lot of Michael Jordan fans in here. Makes me sad, but I know it's true. You know the one thing I always, and I'm not a Michael Jordan fan by any stretch of the imagination, but you know one thing I always respected about Michael Jordan? The man was never afraid to shoot the ball. I have a great amount of respect for a guy who's not afraid to shoot the ball. Because when I used to play basketball, I was never afraid to shoot the ball. If I missed 8 in a row, you know what that meant? There's a greater percentage chance the next one's going in. I can't miss 9 in a row. That was my thought process. I can't miss 9 in a row. This one's got to go in. So the more I missed, the more confident I got. I was like, I'm going to hit the next one, you know. Keep shooting. Keep shooting. Because you know who never makes a basket? The person who never shoots the ball, right? The person who never shoots the ball never scores a basket. It's a simple equation. Nobody's ever scored a basket they didn't shoot. That is a true statement right there. And by the way, the worst shooters in the world accidentally make a shot occasionally. That is the blind squirrel analogy. We worry about failure, and we think about failure. We're like, well, what if I witnessed to 100 people? What if I witnessed to 100 people and only one person listened to me? That's a 1% success rate. Now, think about this. If you witness to 100 people a year and only one person listened to you and got to know Jesus, over the course of 30 years, with that 1% success rate, guess how many people would go to heaven because of your efforts? 30. Now, what if those 30 people witnessed to one person, witnessed to 100 people a year and had one success per year? And all of a sudden, those 30 people per year become how many? Oh, see, now we get into complicated math. Let's see, 30 a year would be 60? Or is it 30 times 30? What? Where's the math, huh? 30 times 30. That's like, what? 900. 900. Now your 1% success rate, thanks, Sam. Now your 1% success rate is 900 people. Now let me ask you a question. What sounds better, 0 or 900? 900 sounds a lot better than 0, right? Just as an encouragement, I want to share something with you this morning. I got a passage here. I didn't give it to Catherine. Catherine, can I ask you to throw something up for me on the fly? John chapter 6, 66 and 67. Jesus had been out and fed the 5,000. He had fed the 5,000. And that, by the way, that was 5,000 men. That didn't include women and children. So all these people were following him. And to get away from the crowd, Jesus had walked across the lake. The story of walking on the water. He had gone across the lake. But the crowds had figured out where he'd gone, and they followed him. And so this mass of people, thousands of people have followed Jesus around the lake, and they're listening to his teaching. And then his teaching gets difficult, and everybody leaves. And so in verse 66 of John chapter 6, it says, as a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. So Jesus said to the 12, you do not want to go away also, do you? Jesus has had literally thousands of people following him for several days. 5,000 men he fed. If you throw in women and children, there may have been as many as 10 to 12,000 people that were following Jesus at that time. These people are following him. They're listening to his teaching. He's got a massive crowd. But then he starts telling them stuff they don't want to hear. He starts telling them difficult things. And they start to disperse because they're not interested in what he has to say anymore. And this massive crowd that Jesus has amassed is now back down to who? The 12. And Jesus is so frustrated by all these people that have abandoned him that he looks at his guys and says, you going to leave too? You going to leave too? Any of you ever felt like that? Where you feel like I've gone out and I've tried to share this message, I've tried to share this gospel, and nobody's listening, nobody's paying attention. It's a waste of my time. Why am I wasting my time? Think about Jesus for a minute. Throughout the course of his ministry, he healed a lot of people, right? He fed a lot of people. He did a lot of miracles. He taught a lot of great lessons. The Sermon on the Mount. I mean, all these things he's done. And then when we get to the end of his life, as he's standing there in front of Pilate, and Pilate says, here's what I'll do. I'll give you Jesus or I'll give you Barabbas. Who does the crowd tell him to free? Yeah, Barabbas, free Barabbas. What do you want me to do with Jesus? Crucify him. 3 years of preaching, 3 years of teaching, 3 years of miracles, 3 years of all the things he's done. And the crowd says, kill him. You reckon there are people in that crowd that have heard Jesus preach? You reckon there are people in that crowd that have heard him teach? You reckon there are people in that crowd that have seen the miracles? And yet, they've lost interest. They're not fascinated by what he shared anymore. The seed that he had spread had fallen on rocky soil or by the roadside or among the thorns. But you know what was out there? There was some seed that had fallen on good soil. And at Pentecost, that seed started to grow. And before long, Christianity had spread throughout the Roman Empire. But you know what? On the day that Jesus was given over to be crucified, it wasn't obvious that any of that seed had taken. You know, one of the hard things about growing stuff is it takes a while. Any of you ever tried to grow something and you got really impatient because you wanted it to grow faster and it didn't grow faster? I was in the gas station one day waiting to pay for my cup of coffee, and this guy was in front of me, and he had a baby, and he and his wife kept passing the baby back and forth because the baby wouldn't stop screaming. And he looked at her and he said, I'll be glad when this kid is old enough to walk and talk. And I went, no, you don't. No, you don't. You think you can't wait for that? And the guy looked at me and goes, really? I said, I got two of them. They both walk and talk. And I miss the days when they didn't do either one. Those were good days. When the baby never looked at you, when it went and sassed you because they could. There was no sass from the baby. I didn't pick a name. I didn't pick a kid. You know? I'm not. Jason just identified one. I did not. Any of you ever remember growing something in school and you put the seed in there and you're supposed to grow and you just get sit there and wait for it? It's pop, and it's like, man, this thing's taking forever. This is taking forever. Some of you may have somebody that you've been working on for a long time. That's one of these days I'm gonna get this person to come to church. One of these days I'm gonna get them to come, and just doesn't seem to be happening. But you know what? You don't know what's going on with that seed. So you just keep throwing the seed out there. But Jesus was a great example of this. The idea that we think just because we're throwing the seed out there and it's just going to grow. You know, it's ironic. If you look at Jesus at the time he died, most of us would identify Jesus as a failure based on the number of followers he had. After 3 years of preaching and teaching all over Palestine, Samaria, Israel, miracles, teaching, preaching, all the things he'd done, he had amassed very few followers. And so by most of our definition, he would have been a failure. And in fact, some of the disciples probably thought he was when he died, before he resurrected. The point is that we have gotten to this point where we judge our successes completely differently than Jesus judges them. And so we think about percentage, and we think about, well, our success rate. And the reality is it's not about success rate. It's not about percentages. It's just about effort. Jesus says, you guys go out and put in the effort. You sow the seed. I'll water it. We'll make it grow. But you got to get out there and plant. I need planters. I need sowers. This morning, as we get ready for our communion time, as the praise team comes up to get ready to lead us in our communion song this morning, I just want to challenge you with a simple question. How much seed sowing have you done in the past week, past month? So far in 2022, we're almost 3 months into the year. How much seed sowing have you done? Are you just at a point where you're like, I don't see the point anymore. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not being successful. I want to encourage you to remember that the sower is not judged on the amount of seed that grows. The sower is judged on how much seed he sows. God brings the harvest. We just sow the seed.